Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the State Bank Financial Corporation results for the first quarter 2015. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator for assistance, please press star 0 on your phone. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, April 23rd, 2015. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Joe Evans, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer at State Bank Financial Corporation. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Donnie. Good morning, and thank you for joining our call. With me on the call this morning are Tom Wiley, our President, Sheila Ray, Chief Financial Officer, and Kim Childers, our Chief Risk Officer. After our prepared remarks, as usual, we'll open the line for questions. Also, as is customary, you'll find our first quarter press release and slide presentation that we're going to reference through this call in the investor section of our website, statebt.com. And I also need to remind you that these comments are subject to our cautionary note for forward-looking statements that are contained in the press release as well as on slide 2 of the earnings presentation. Getting on to business. First quarter results on slide 3, I think, reflect what I believe the year to be off to a very good start, actually a great start. Net income was $9.2 million for the quarter, but more than the dollar amount of net income, I'm more pleased with how we generated that bottom line than I am just the absolute number itself. Let's turn to slide 4. On previous calls, I've talked about the three primary fee income generators that we want to focus on, payroll, mortgage, and SBA, and our commitment to grow them. Results of this quarter reflect that we're doing just that. Much of that success is a direct result of our picking acquisition partners that make us better, not just bigger. In mortgage, we had total production over $118 million, leading to $2.7 million of fee income for the first quarter. This compares to just $835,000 in mortgage fee income for State Bank in all of 2014, and this growth is attributable in a large part to our successfully leveraging First Bank of Georgia's mortgage expertise across our entire footprint. This is just the beginning. We've only begun to scratch the surface of mortgage opportunity in Metro Atlanta, Middle Georgia, and particularly in State Bank's own builder finance program. The SBA production team that joined us with Bank of Atlanta also had a great quarter, booking $8.5 million of SBA loans, generating $1.1 million fee income. We're very optimistic about the SBA business as we've had a very strong pipeline in place and continue to explore opportunities to add additional experienced producers. We acquired Alterra Payroll in October of 2012, and it has become for us a competitive game changer. Payroll fee income, which is typically strong in the first quarter due to seasonality, reached a record quarterly high of $1.2 million in the first quarter, roughly 22% higher than the first quarter of 2014, as we continue to grow this business in Atlanta, Middle Georgia, and now in Augusta. Successfully integrating payroll as a natural extension of our expertise in payments, treasury, and cash management is a major driver of our continued growth in transaction account balances. Overall, our non-interest income was $10.3 million in the first quarter, up 94% from the $5.3 million we recorded last quarter, and up over 300% from the $3.1 million we experienced in the first quarter of 2014. I'm extremely pleased with these results, but I'm even more pleased to see such positive impact so quickly from our acquisitions. This speaks well of both the quality of the teams that joined us as well as damn good execution. During the quarter, we also announced the acquisition of Boyette Agency as a first step in developing an insurance line of business. We're going to be very thoughtful and deliberate in the way we introduce mortgage to our clients, and we believe that over time, this can be yet another meaningful source of non-interest income that will also lead to building deeper client relationships. In addition to growing fee income and low-cost deposits, we also make loans. And in the first quarter, we generated in excess of $113 million of organic loan growth while continuing to maintain exceptional credit metrics. Overall, a very good, very solid quarter to begin this year. Much work remains to be done as we continue to grow State Bank in a safe and profitable manner going forward, but I'm really pleased with the momentum, the start, and what I see carrying forward into the rest of the year. With that, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Tom Wiley to talk about the loan portfolio and our deposit mix.
Thank you, Joe. Looking on slide five, you can see the strong organic loan growth Joe mentioned earlier. Excluding purchase loans and our two recent acquisitions, we had organic loan growth of $113 million, or 8.6% in the first quarter, and organic loan growth of $267 million, or 22.8% year-over-year. Including acquired loans from Bank of Atlanta and First Bank, total gross loans increased $381 million in the first quarter and increased $642 million year over year. Additionally, purchase credit impaired loans ended the quarter at only $191 million, inclusive of less than $2 million of purchase credit impaired loans from First Bank. And it's important to note, that of the $191 million of purchase credit impaired loans, over $155 million, or roughly 81%, are currently paying as agreed. This is a reflection of the success we have experienced in servicing and resolving acquired portfolios of purchase credit impaired loans. Also on slide five, you will notice that we originated over $315 million of new loans in the first quarter. These originations, when combined with paydowns, which are historically slower in the first quarter, drove the strong growth in organic loans. As we have said previously, new loan fundings remain fairly consistent, but the level of paydowns as the portfolio matures is what primarily drives the net growth. Having capacity and expertise to make commercial real estate loans has allowed us to build a portfolio with attractive yields and has been a differentiator for us in the markets we serve. Within the CRE portfolio, there is a significant diversification by industry and source of repayment. A detailed breakout of our CRE concentrations by collateral is at the bottom of slide five. We actively monitor the more granular aspects of CRE concentrations and ultimately are confident with our loan structures, the strength of our borrowers, general credit characteristics, the diversity of the asset classes, pricing, and the stress tolerance of the portfolio. Moving to deposit funding on slide six, we continue to experience solid growth in transaction deposit accounts, which consist of non-interest-bearing demand deposits and interest-bearing transaction accounts. Inclusive of acquired deposits, period-end transaction deposits increased over $180 million in the first quarter and increased over $400 million year-over-year. Non-interest-bearing demand deposits comprised nearly 25% of total deposits at the end of the first quarter. While the quarterly growth was strong, deposits continued to be affected by seasonality and the general transactional nature of these accounts, which is why I want to highlight our consistent, steady growth in average non-interest-bearing demand deposits, which increased for the 12th consecutive quarter, exclusive of any acquired deposits. As our deposit funding mix continues to improve, our cost of funds went down this quarter to 29 basis points, a 4 basis point improvement from the previous quarter. With that, I will turn the presentation over to Sheila to discuss our financial results.
Thank you, Tom. I'm going to start on slide 7 of the presentation. Total interest income on loans and invested funds was $25 million, up from $20.3 million in the previous quarter, due mostly to the addition of First Bank loans in the first quarter, but also aided by our strong organic loan growth. Higher interest income combined with higher accretion income led to net interest income of $39.1 million, which was up from $32.5 million in the fourth quarter of 2014. The increase in accretion income results from one pool closeout during the quarter and improved cash flows or recoveries on purchased credit-impaired loans. Non-interest income, excluding the indemnification asset amortization, was $10.3 million in the first quarter, an increase of nearly $5 million from the previous quarter, as Joe mentioned. The chart on the bottom right of the slide displays our revenue contribution from each of the 3C income initiatives, which collectively grew $3.2 million from the prior quarter. Moving on to slide 8, total non-interest expense for the quarter was $30.1 million, with the increase related to the First Bank acquisition, which accounted for nearly $6 million of non-interest expense in the first quarter. Excluding First Bank, legacy non-interest expense, which includes Bank of Atlanta, was down from the previous quarter and up roughly $1 million from the first quarter of 2014, which, as a reminder, did not include Bank of Atlanta. Non-interest expense includes $417,000 in intangibles expense, which has increased since the previous year as a result of our recent acquisitions. And we also recorded approximately $365,000 in severance expense and $137,000 in merger-related expenses in the first quarter, which are reflected as one-time or non-core expenses on our chart on slide 8. If you'll turn now to slide 9, you can see the remaining accretable discount from the purchased portfolios that we expect to realize compared to the remaining FDIC receivable. We have $110 million of remaining accretable discount, which includes the accretable discount on non-covered purchased credit-impaired loans. The FDIC receivable stands at $17 million at the end of the first quarter of 2015. As a reminder, accretion income may continue to have some volatility due to the accounting treatment for loan pool closeouts. This concludes my remarks, and I'll now turn the discussion over to Ken.
Sheila, thank you, and good morning, everyone. On slide 10, you'll note the organic loan portfolio continues to perform well. Non-performing loans of $4.8 million represent 33 basis points of total organic loans, and past due loans remain low at just 11 basis points of total organic loans. The allowance as a percent of organic loans stands at 1.36% at the end of the first quarter, exceeding organic NPAs by over four times at quarter end. ORE balances did increase during the first quarter, primarily due to First Bank, and ended the quarter at $16.8 million. We recorded provision expense of $3.2 million in the first quarter, with approximately $1.1 million related to the growth in organic loans, and the remainder due to purchased credit-impaired loans. Net losses on the organic portfolio were minuscule in the first quarter, rounding to 0 basis points. The provision for PCI loans relates to our normal quarterly cash flow re-estimations, with the majority of the provision related to a single loan. During the quarter, we also had some large recoveries from our PCI portfolio. However, impairment must be taken immediately, while recognition of revenue is recaptured through accretion over the life of the loan. In the first quarter, roughly $6 million was transferred to accretable discount, and after $16 million was recognized as accretion, approximately $110 million of accretable discount remains to be collected as accretion income. Overall, our purchase credit impaired portfolio continues to perform better than our original expectations, And now I'll turn our discussion back over to Joe to wrap up.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Sheila. Thank you, Tom. Just in summary, it was a solid quarter. The acquisitions that we closed both the first of this quarter and in the fourth quarter of last year didn't waste any time in showing their effect on the bottom line and just culturally and functionally integrating into the company, which goes back to a validation of the philosophy that we have in finding acquisitions that fit and make us better, not just bigger. The energy that we're experiencing as a result of the leadership of Bank of Atlanta and First Bank of Georgia being part of us is just a very noticeable, energizing effect of this organization. And to the extent that we can find more deals just like that, we'll take them all day long. Solid quarter, and with that, I'd like to turn it open the line for your questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has already been answered and you want to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you're using a speakerphone, please be sure to lift your handset before entering your request. Our first question comes from the line of Kevin Fitzsimmons calling from Hoyt Group. Your line is open. Please proceed.
Hey, everyone. It's Kevin Fitzsimmons, Hubdy Group. Good morning. Just a few questions. Joe, can you help us with how to think going forward on the IA amortization? You know, I know the long-term story was always that once the loss share agreements expired, we were going to have a much lower amount of that, but just any sense on how to think of it going forward. And then also the provision for PCI loans, given that bulk of it was tied to one loan, I mean, is it reasonable that we should not be expecting that to to reoccur?
Let me take the back end of that and then let Sheila take the amortization question. Let's take the Eastside portfolio that we bought last spring, I guess it was. We booked about $25 million of that portfolio that we bought without loss share from the FDIC. That portfolio is down to about $15 million. In this quarter, out of that portfolio alone, we picked up $2.1 million in cash accretion for loans that were terminally recognized and had a gain. We picked up another $2.1 million in accretable discount because the cash flows were better than we had historically forecast. We had one loan that the forecast was diminished for $1.3 million. So out of you had $4.2 million to the good and $1.3 negative out of a $15 million portfolio. You will always have some degree, as long as you're in this business, there will be some negative re-estimation of cash flows. They will always show up as a provision, while all of the variances to the good are either going to flow through current recognized accretion or an increase in the accretable discount. I will try to be transparent as to where they proportionately shake out, but if you're going to be in the business of purchasing and resolving impaired portfolios, that periodic pop to the provision is just a fact of life. Our measurement is as long as the good news outweighs the bad news by multiples of about 3-1, that's a business that we want to stay in. Now, Sheila, you want to talk about the amortization?
Yes, sir. On the indemnification asset, I guess the good news is that it is becoming less and less of a story that we need to talk about. After 2016, the amortization really won't be meaningful to us anymore. Over a weighted average basis, it's probably 4 to 5 quarters left. We have $10 million approximately scheduled in amortization. So I hope that gives you the guidance you need.
That's great. And then just to follow up, Joe, if you can, I know last year you spoke of not wanting to sit for all that long with this much capital that you all have, and that you guys were going to be looking toward year end at a very detailed plan of what you were going to do with it over the course of 2015 and into 16. So with that in mind, can you share any results of that study or just generally what your outlook is for M&A?
The results of the study show that the best thing we can do with that cash is to find some more deals like the two we just closed. And I think we are pretty good at finding them and executing them and being patient in the way that we turn over rocks and look for them. So our priority is to keep looking for ways to leverage that capital, realizing that at some point in time, if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, and there are multiple ways that we can deal with downsizing our capital. But right now, I continue to be pleased with the optionality that that capital gives us, the results of the acquisitions that we've done thus far, and the general activity that we see out in the marketplace. So at this point in time, our plan is keep trying to do what we have done thus far.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes to the line of Paul Miller, calling from FBR Capital Markets. Your line is open. Please proceed.
Good morning, guys. This is actually Thomas on behalf of Paul. Joe, with the addition of the insurance business and I guess the payroll business getting bigger, can we expect to see more seasonality in fee income than we have in the past, or could you sort of outline how I should think about that?
Now, the only real seasonality in that business is relative to the payroll company. And it's not a huge percentage. They charge specifically for W-2 for sending out the W-2s at the end of the year, and that is a first quarter specific income effect that proportionately will grow as the overall payroll business grows. The other lines of business don't know. We've not determined any meaningful seasonality to the others, and as I said, the first quarter W-2 billing is the only piece of payroll that really has a seasonality effect to it.
And the insurance as well, or?
Well, insurance at this point in time is a long term. Stick our toe in the water and try a few things. I don't expect any time this year for insurance income to be a meaningful contributor to the bottom line.
Okay.
At this point in time, we're exploring some places that we think we might have a natural competitive advantage in linking insurance with a credit type products, such as the mortgage program, such as builder finance, some specific targeted applications. But at this point in time, that is I put that in the category of R&D, and would not lead you to expect any measurable effect out of that in this calendar year.
Okay, great. That's great color, Joe. Thanks.
Our next question comes to the line of Kevin Reynolds, calling from Wunderlich Securities. Your line is open. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. How are you?
Hey, Kevin.
My question today is about the pace of loan growth and the dynamics out there in the marketplace. It looks like you've had probably your best quarter of loan fundings, if I'm reading the chart correctly, that we've seen here. Can you, Joe, maybe talk about how you feel about it? Because I know there are some companies out there where Q1 is seasonally a weaker quarter for the pace of loan growth. So are there any seasonal elements that may have actually held that back or not? And then what are you seeing with respect to the competitive environment out there that makes you feel either better or worse about the pace of loan growth going forward coming out of Q1?
Okay, I'll talk about the seasonality part, and I'll let Tom talk about the origination part and the competitive fees. The seasonality is really more related to the magnitude of paydowns. The nature of a significant portion of our commercial real estate are projects that when they are completed, matured, rent rolls seasoned, the expectation is that they will either be taken out to the long-term capital markets for permanent financing or sold. And the nature of that business is that a lot of that activity happens in the fourth quarter. So we have, if you look back for the past few years, we have had large paydowns coming out of that segment of our commercial real estate in the fourth quarter. You don't have as much in the first quarter. So originations being constant, you'll wind up with a big pickup in growth and outstandings in the first quarter. There may be some seasonality attached to the utilization of lines of credit that would lead to some drawdowns of existing lines in the first quarter, but that's an intuitive observation, not something that we've really researched. But a big piece of that growth this quarter it came from the fact that we just had a very light quarter for paydowns. We still, as we have continued to have had strong originations. But it was more a fluctuation in the paydown that reflected the large growth in outstandings this quarter, more so than a radical pickup in originations.
Well, and Joe, yes, if I could just ask before we move on there, what I was looking at there as well, it was in that funding section or the funding bar where you saw last year there was actually a decline in fundings, it looks like, from 4Q to 1Q, and this year there was a pickup in funding. So I guess as we transition the conversation into that competitive dynamic as well, is there something else going on out there on the ground where more activity is bubbling up, or you're winning more business, or is it a combination of both that drove that loan fundings number higher in the first quarter?
Yeah, I think I would attribute that to really a maturing of our team. I mean, we need to keep in mind this is a going on 6-year-old company, but the first 3 or 4 years were dominated by loss share work. And growing our teams and having our teams culturally get on board with our credit standards, and we are, you know, candidly, it's still competitive, and it's no different. Atlanta's Atlanta, and Middle Georgia's Middle Georgia. But I do think in terms of providing a competitive advantage of both competency of our bankers and speed and certainty of close with our clients, we win a significant amount of business. And I think that will continue to be reflected in our originations.
I also think what a byproduct of that maturation that Tom referenced of the production force and our credit team becoming just increasingly in sync, it allows the production team to be tremendously more efficient in that they bring fewer and fewer and fewer deals to the table that don't get approved. And without having to add a lot of heads to the production staff, the efficiency with which they're working is particularly if you compare what's going on right now to say 2 years ago, there's been a light year of improvement. The credit team and the production team are just really joined at the hip. There's a very effective early vetting process, such that loans that aren't going to fly, very little time is wasted on them. Again, that translates into a much higher level of efficiency in production and is contributing, I think, very directly to the growth.
Okay. Thanks a lot for that color.
Our next question comes from the line of Christopher Marinac, calling from FICC Partners. Your line is open. Please proceed.
Thanks. Good morning. Joe and team, I was wondering if you could give us a little more breakdown on the mortgage business, just in terms of purchase and refi, and then also perhaps what's coming out of the legacy First Bank platform versus what's done in Middle Georgia and Atlanta.
Sure. Chris, this is Tom. First of all, it's highly purchase money. I'd say 90% is purchase versus refi. The refi cycles are pretty much done, and the First Bank mortgage team has always focused on purchase, given refi as sort of a second seat on the bus. The total volume first quarter in First Bank, it was $101 million. That's about $38 million more or ahead of their quarter, first quarter last year, or about 59% increase. So that's an improvement in their process. Atlanta, Middle Georgia has historically led our State Bank Mortgage Group. It's a fairly mature group of producers, and they continue to do basically the same volumes they always have. The intent is to grow that team, which will occur, but more importantly, the mortgage portfolio in Atlanta, which was negligible, really, in any previous quarters. We've just landed one of the top producers in Atlanta that the projections are that she'll produce on her own somewhere in the $35 to $45 million volume, and she wants to bring additional originators on from her previous team on board. We've got a huge opportunity in our builder finance group where we do zero of the in mortgages, and that's where most of our time and attention will be focused in the coming quarters.
Great. Is the new lender in Atlanta, is the cost of that reflected in this quarter, or would that come in the second quarter?
No, that'll be second quarter. Just signed on, I think, this past week.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. Perfect. And then a separate follow-up, I guess, just has to do with the whole pay-down discussion that you've been having. If interest rates were to go up even just a slight amount late this year, does that change the dynamic on pay-downs further kind of in State Bank's favor?
It might. Yeah, it might. But depends on what the shape of the curve does. If the borrowers don't have as much of an enticement to go for long, cheap, fixed-rate loans out in the capital markets, it certainly could incent them to stay with their interim financing on us longer.
Yeah. And when there's a 10-year dip, you see refinances.
Yeah. Yeah. Tom just said that any time you see the 10-year rate dip, we get a pickup in payoffs. So I would say it's the relative rate between the short-term variable program that we're running for the interim financing relative to the takeouts that are driven by the 10-year, that relative fluctuation is what either increases or diminishes the rate of payoffs.
Gotcha. Okay, great. And just one last question, I guess, perhaps for Sheila, just has to do with the your quarterly re-estimations on the PCI portfolio. Are most of those going to be smaller going forward, or are there still some potential for healthy changes to the positive as you get more and more information on how loans are behaving?
There's going to continue to be some opportunity for positive volatility as particularly future pools close out and we go through the normal re-estimation process associated with that. I think you're looking at that continuing over the rest of this year and probably on a lesser degree next year.
Okay, great. Thanks for all your background here.
Thank you.
And our next question comes to the line of Jennifer Demba calling from SunTrust Robinson Humphrey. The line is open. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. Question on the insurance segment. Joe, can you kind of give us an idea of what you think the potential in annual revenue is for that area over the next, say, 1 to 2 years?
Well, I can tell you that for the next year, it's negligible. And beyond that, we haven't figured it out yet. This was a very low-ticket acquisition that gave us access to a very good array of insurance companies with a very broad array of potential products, and we've got an R&D team looking at where the opportunities for application of that to our book of banking business. The little insurance agency on its own is profitable, but it's about $600,000 a year of total revenue. Beyond that, the question is how well can we figure out the natural fits of opportunities between our banking relationships and an appropriate insurance product, and can we figure out how to link that in a way that it's an efficient, scalable referral plan. So my expectation is that as we go into 16, we will have figured out one or two specific applications of insurance, and in 2016 we have something meaningful out of it. But I can't quantify that for you at this stage.
Thanks so much.
And our next question comes to the line of Tyler Stafford calling from Stephens. Your line is open. Please proceed.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, Tyler.
I wanted to start on expenses, and I was hoping I could get some color on how much of the Georgia Carolina cost saves you recognize this quarter. Remind us how much is left to go and maybe what time frame we could expect to see these.
Okay. First of all, let me say something philosophical about that before I let Sheila give you some information. The cost savings are there. When we realize those cost savings is very much a secondary consideration to me than making sure that the revenue streams and the customer relationships solidify. Those revenue streams, to the extent that you either make them happen or not, that's forever. The cost saves are there whenever we pull the trigger, and we want to make sure we pull the trigger on the cost saves in such a way that there's minimal disruption to customer relationships and the growth of these revenue streams. That having been said, Sheila, why don't you shed some quantitative light on that?
Well, first of all, I would say let's set the timetable in place here, because we're looking at a conversion right now that we're hoping to accomplish in the third quarter. And at that time is when you'd start seeing some pickup in synergies. We've had some minimal pickup before that time. They are not in market and are still running an independent bank, quite frankly, and it's important to us. So we're not looking to pinch pennies on them. I think that you'll see after the conversion, though, in the fourth quarter, you'll start seeing some recognition, and then you'll see another pickup in the expense save in the first quarter of 2016. However, I also want you to keep in mind, if you look at our gross numbers, as you see them on the expenses, we're also trying to continue to grow an important line of business they brought to us, which is mortgage, and we'll be adding producers, as we've already talked about, in the Atlanta market in particular, to leverage the management talent we brought from Augusta that we think can help to increase our revenue stream. But we do expect to see that Q4 and Q1 of 16.
Okay, that's helpful. And then over on the margin, Your liquidity was down, call it $185 million or so on an end-of-period basis. Are we at a floor here, or could that come down even further and provide some more margin relief next quarter?
The decline in liquidity, I'm sorry, Joseph, the decline in liquidity was intentional. We chose to put a little more out in the investment portfolio, and we're also fortunate enough to be able to do some more in loans, so we were able to have a little less overnight cash. As you well know, that's our lowest yielding earning asset, and we do expect to bring that down a little more.
Okay, and then one last one, if I can sneak it in. Just looking for some color on the loan pool closeout this quarter and how large that gain was from the particular closeout you had.
$2.6 million.
Okay, that's it for me. Thanks, guys.
And our next question comes to the line of Blair Brantley, calling from BB&T Capital Markets. Your line is open. Please proceed.
Good morning, everyone. Had a question about the loan portfolio growth, kind of maybe where that came from. Was it all legacy State Bank, or if any came from some of the acquisitions? And then how should we think about kind of pipelines and growth going forward?
Well, first of all, the bulk of the loan growth did come from legacy State Bank. You would expect that during a period of time when a bank is focused on integration as opposed to growth. But pipelines are robust. We continue to see high-quality loans. They're, as everybody else, they're pricey. It's hard to get to the finish line when people are willing to do things that are longer, looser, and lower. But with that in mind, as I said earlier, I think the quality of banker we put in front of our clients, we'll continue to see fairly robust pipelines. I think the market is giving us that.
Yeah, I don't know if you looked at the economic metrics on Metro Atlanta, but we're getting good economic pickup here, getting good job growth. And we feel very good about the economic health of the playing field that we're on.
Okay, that's very helpful. Flipping gears to on the operating expense side, what's the size of your workout team today, and is there any more opportunity there to shrink that group, or just some thoughts about that?
There is meaningful opportunity to shrink that, and I can't quote you any numbers, anything off the top of the head, but there's still as much, I would say more so in the loss share administration side of things than in the pure workout piece. We would like to remain active in the acquisition and liquidation of distressed debt. So to the extent that we're able to do some more east side type portfolios and add to that revenue stream, the pure workout people, we'd like to try to, our preference would be to keep them busy as opposed to letting them go. There is some meaningful expense tied still to the administration of loss share, and to the extent, I'm sure y'all are all aware that probably everybody, that early termination is at least an industry topic in everybody that's done loss share. One of the motivations of folks like us in exploring that or the ability to terminate some of that administrative cost.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And our next question comes to the line of Jefferson Harrelson, calling from KBW. Your line is open. Please proceed.
Hey, guys, I might just follow up on that question right there. Can you settle with the FDIC on, single particular order loss shares as they're getting kind of older and smaller, and is that something that is likely to happen?
Wait, ask me that. I'm not sure I got the full content of that. Jefferson, would you
I was kind of following up on Blair's on early, you know, I guess buying early out of your loss shares with the FDIC, and I was just wondering what the chances of some of those of that is, and it's how it would work. Would you do it on particular deals and older deals and ones where the ones are getting smaller?
If you look at what has happened with other players thus far in the industry, I think early termination is approached as either you early terminate them all or you don't early terminate any. I think that the further you go into any of these agreements, the variables become easier for both the FDIC and the bank to get their heads around. And what you really start to talk about is what are the drivers of these deals. On one side, you've got cost savings, and on the other side, you've got the potential recoveries that are out there that I suspect that's a right sizable future stream of recoveries that I think everybody sees at this stage of loss share. And instead of being a net collector as you get late in the game, you start being a net payer as you start to share back with the FDIC the recoveries that in the same percentage that you shared with them on loss share recovery. So, it certainly is a current topic among all of us, I think, that have played in this space. And there's an interesting opportunity there.
All right. Do you think that your book here, your remaining cover book, is kind of too big right now and needs to wait till you get smaller, or is your current book about the size of some of the others who have taken the deal?
I've seen people do deals larger, and I've seen people do deals smaller. I think it is so individualized that you can't really draw a pattern there.
All right. I appreciate the color there. It's one other smaller question on the loan yield. It went up from the core loan yield went from 4.85 to 4.87. It was up a couple of basis points. Is that just because of layering in GECR, or is there something else going on to get a higher loan yield there?
It's primarily the First Bank book coming in.
Okay, so their loan yield was higher, or is it just because of their? Their loan yield was greater than 4.85 coming in with a mark, or how should I think about that?
As far as just overall loan yields, first of all, as we've explained in prior calls, new loans are coming on slightly lower than the pay downs, and that trend continues, but it has slowed significantly. Then you layer into that the addition of the First Bank loans, which with the day one mark, also have a higher yield because you create with the purchase accounting an accretable opportunity there as well. So their loan portfolio has a better yield and was a significant improvement to our a significant increase to our loan portfolio.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Evans, I'm showing that we have no further questions on the phone at this time. I'll turn it back to you for your closing remarks.
Very good. Donnie, thank you, and thank you all for being with us. We feel really good about the results that we delivered for the first quarter and look very much forward to having another positive discussion with you in July. Thank you very much.
Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference call for today. We do thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.